All right. Hey, everybody. Pastor Darren here with Pastor Joel for our Sunday sermon recap. So on Sunday, we picked up in Luke chapter 22, verses 39 through 46. And this passage actually kind of picks up with Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane praying. And one thing that was really cool that you did was you broke out that timeline of things, right, of events. Can you kind of share a little bit about that timeline and why that was so important? Because we talked a little bit about that before church, and it was just kind of really cool how you broke that down for me.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of times when we read just the events of Jesus's life leading up to the cross, so we're talking Last Supper, Garden of Gethsemane, his arrest, standing before Pilate, you know, his way to Golgotha, all of that. We kind of read them as individual stories, so they're all kind of separate stories. We don't always think of them all together, and it's kind of important to know that this is not like different days. We're not talking days, we're talking hours.
Yeah.
So like Jesus left the Last Supper and went to the garden. He left the garden and he went and got arrested, you know. After his arrest, he stands before Pilate, and we're talking from 6 p.m., you know, to 6 a.m. So this is all through the night, all these things are going on. So I just think it's something important that everybody needs to kind of see and understand the full context of the weight of it, especially in the garden with what Jesus is going through. You got to understand, like, this is a whole story. This is a whole continuation, you know.
So, yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of why I showed it.
And that's so true because when you think of, like, going through the Gospels, you think of, okay, Peter walked on water. Okay, then this happened. Okay,
right.
But and there's a lot of times there's like he traveled to this region, so there was a period of time
that he went
to that next spot.
Right.
But in this case, you're saying it was hours.
Yeah, exactly.
In between.
Yeah, so you don't have that text saying, "Oh, he, you know, they made their way to, you know,
Capernaum,
or anything like that."
Right.
You know, they don't. You don't have that. You know, and really we break it apart because of the format in which we receive the Bible, which is like you got a title header. You know, you got this number. Then there's another title header.
And it's good for preaching. It's easy for us to preach off.
Great for preaching, but like, you know, if you're trying to understand the whole scope of things, you got to kind of look beyond those kind of those boundaries, you know. So yeah, that was good.
That was good. And it was, like I said, even before church, you had this up on the screen. It's like, oh, I never thought of that.
Yeah.
Because I always think of them as these separate stories,
right,
just kind of connected together.
Exactly.
But they are separate. But they're all in the same timeline.
They're all related, yeah.
All related. So that was good. That was really good.
You kind of better understand it. You understand the garden of, like, the Gethsemane better when you understand the gravity of what just happened at the Last Supper.
Right. You know? What happened before and after.
Uh-huh,
and he's,
exactly,
like, right in that middle. Okay.
Right.
This is what led up to that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah. That's good. So you started off the message talking about God's creativity, and I know you wanted to go in deep on this, because this is you, man.
This is definitely you.
But you also said that many of the things that we find valuable and beautiful many times are birthed out of difficulty or pressure or pain. You kind of use the example of like a diamond or a butterfly.
Right.
And even just getting married and having a spouse, you know, for us, you know, you've been chilling for 30 years doing your thing. Now all of a sudden, you have to die to yourself.
Right, yeah. To say the least.
It's not all about you anymore.
Right,
so,
yeah.
And that could be painful. But the beauty in that is that you have someone who loves you for the rest of your life. You have a partner,
exactly,
which is beautiful.
Yeah, it's like the most valuable things in life. The things we value the most are born out of hardship. And I just had to call out the fact that God designed that system. I mean, He created that. Like, it literally could have been anything else.
Yeah.
I mean, he could have said,
he could have made it easy for us.
You know? And I said this kind of backhandedly, like, you know, why, I don't know, but it could be that he knew that we take it for granted. Mm. If it comes easy, then it's not that special.
Yeah.
It's not that important. But he could have designed it any other way, but this was what he chose to teach us, to show us, and for remarkable and amazing things that happen in this life. You got to go through some pressure and pain and hardship, you know.
And that's so true. If you think about, like you said, you gave the example of a diamond.
Right.
If diamonds were just a dime a dozen, they're anywhere.
Right.
Oh, there's a diamond out there. I just kicked it on my way in.
Right.
You wouldn't value it.
Yeah.
But because of the pressure of what it takes to have a diamond,
right,
we value it so much more.
Exactly.
Yeah, and there's a beauty in that.
Yeah, and I, you know, I don't know if this is just too abstract, but I just like the fact that God designed it that way.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I always think about this. This is, you know me, bro. I'm going to be talking about this stuff. Like, I look at the grass and I'm like, God designed it to be green and to point upward. Why didn't he flip it? Why didn't we dig underneath the ground and there's green grass pointing down? You know, like weird stuff like that where he could have done anything he wanted to, but he decided to do things the way that I think he likes it.
Yeah.
You know, like he, you look at a sky here in Texas and it's like this pink purple color, and I'm always telling Manny, I'm like, who chose those colors? Could have chose any color. He chose those colors. Why did he choose those colors? I mean, I can't answer the question, but I like to think that he liked those colors.
Yeah,
like it was special to him, you know. Like, look at a zebra's stripes. I mean, that's a wild design. That's a crazy design.
Yeah.
Yo, he was just having fun. You know what I mean? You look at a platypus.
Yeah, what was going
on
with
that? Yo, we were just using parts. Duck here, little paddle here, beaver tail here.
You just connect. Those are leftovers.
And then God's like, you know what? I'm going to get crazy. That joker can lay eggs. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, I mean, that should be, you know. So I just love God for that reason, you know, because he's just infinitely creative. Could have created things any other way, but he did that for us, you know. And so, yeah, I wanted to call that out because, like Katie Hutchton, who's a counselor at our church, she said this after the first service. She said, struggle's where all the good stuff happens.
Mm. Yeah.
And I'm like, that's so true. Yeah. You know, it's so true. So.
And you even gave the example of children, you know, having children and seeing our wives go through that pressure, that pain. And the other side is that beauty of a little baby laying on their mama's chest. And
right.
And what's crazy is, you know, they'll say, I want to have another one. It's like, were you in the room when this happened? I was in the room. I saw the pain you were going through. Are you sure? But it's like, no, there was so much beauty in that. Right. You forget about that pain.
Right,
there was so much beauty in that.
Yeah, somebody said that God gives mom short-term memory loss or something like that when it comes to having kids. Like, you know, because if they remembered, they wouldn't have any more. You know, we'd have a crisis on our hands. Right. You know, but it's true.
Yeah. So that's the beauty that you talked about is in that pain. And the thing that we hold most valuable comes from anguish and pain, which leads us to the Garden of Gethsemane. In Luke, he actually refers to it as the Mount of Olives. Can you talk about the significance of the name Gethsemane in this passage?
Yeah. So this was new to me. You know, one of the things I like about doing what we do at the River, which is expositional preaching, is a lot of times we'll take a chapter like we're doing in, or a book like we're doing in Luke,
and we'll
break it apart and we'll go verse by verse. And when you do that as a preacher or pastor, or really just as a person, you're going to see stuff you never saw before. That's why the Bible is like, it's called the living word, because it's alive. You're always seeing new stuff. So like, I got this passage, Mike was like, hey, you're up, and it's the Garden of Gethsemane. And I was like, yo, first thing off the rip, what does Gethsemane mean? Like, I was like, I've never thought about
it. That's my boy. That's my boy in Saginaw. Gethsemane.
Yeah.
He lives on 4th Street.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I even mentioned, like, I hope someone named their son Gethsemane. But I'd never really studied the name. So this was all new to me, you know. And so I look it up and I find out, you know, the first part, Gets, means pressing or a press. And then the last part is oil. So the Garden of Gethsemane is an olive grove where a olive press is located. And I don't know too much about olives. I had to study this, but the most valuable part of an olive is not in the fruit, not in the skin. It's actually the oil that's in the pit. And so the way to extract the oil in the pit is to crush, to press that pit. And that's when the most valuable part of it comes out. You look at that name in parallel with why Jesus is there and what he's experiencing. And then you look at also the impact of just how they said that Jesus would be crushed by our transgressions. No coincidence.
Yeah.
Like, no coincidence. I mean, I look at that and I go, yeah, God knew what he was doing. There was some significance even in the name.
Yeah.
You know, and so... So I think that was a kind of a revelation for me. I'd never heard that before or seen that before. And you know, that's one of the places I wish I could go. I was talking to you. You've been there.
Yeah.
You've been there. Like, what was that like?
It was just beautiful, man. It's like, and just the olive trees, they're not left like these regular trees.
Yeah.
I mean, they're just
the, like stout, super stout tree.
Yeah. But it's beauty on it too. All these flowers on this big stout trunk.
Oh, dang.
And there, cool. It was just all over the place.
That's cool.
And they had little benches around. So, like Jack, just if he wanted to go there, he'd pray.
Yeah.
That's all you can do. I mean, what do you do there?
Right.
That's what you do there.
Yeah.
That's what it felt like.
That's cool, man.
Yeah.
That's cool. I want to go there.
It's beautiful. So, Jesus, speaking the pressure, Jesus feels the pressure of the world taking on the sin of the world. And that pressing, he has to endure. So, that's kind of that Gethsemane, what you were talking about. So, in his case, that pressing isn't for oil or ointment or anything like that.
Right.
He's taking on the sin of the world.
Yeah, it's our salvation. So the pressing, the cause of the pressing is because, you know, he's being crushed by the payment of our sin, you know. And so that's what's so significant about the parallel between the garden and him is that he's being pressed. If we really believe, and this is the way God set it up, that valuable things come from the pressure and the pressing. Our salvation came from Jesus being pressured, like pressed. So that's what's happening in the garden, you know?
Yeah.
It's just crazy.
So as he and his disciples enter in the garden, as you mentioned on Sunday, a shift of focus begins to take place, and that focus is on prayer.
Right.
He tells the disciples to pray. Temptation is coming.
Mm-hmm.
Pray. Can you share what that temptation the disciples would be facing?
Well, it's kind of like, I looked this up and I was trying to find it of like, you know, what is Jesus speaking about specifically, the temptation of it all. And I couldn't really find a specific like thing that he was referencing to as much as he was how they were feeling. So the Bible actually talks about in the last part of the story that they were asleep and they had fallen asleep because of their grief.
Yeah.
So apart from that statement, we don't really have any other ideas of what they might be tempted by or tempted to do or what that temptation is, other than we know that they're full of grief. Now, you know, if you've ever struggled with something or you've lost somebody or you've been through some significant pain and you've suffered with grief, you know, I made the statement, you just get tired. You know what I'm saying? You just want to sleep and not get up. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a really tough thing. And so I think the temptation for these folks at this time is, man, Jesus is about to die.
Yeah.
He's leaving. He told them that at the Last Supper. And they just got a lot. They're stricken with grief, you know. And Adam made the statement, when you're hungry, angry, lonely, or tired, that's when you get tempted the most.
Yeah.
You know. And I would say they're, you know, maybe not angry, but they're feeling the weight of Jesus, whom they love, not being with them anymore. And so temptation is real at this point for them. And so I think he's saying, like, hey, the way that you overcome temptation is you pray.
Yeah.
And so that was kind of one of the main points of that portion of it is Jesus clearly states here, one of the best ways to fight temptation in your life is to pray.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, I've read this story so many times, but never saw this with a prayer focus.
Yeah.
But, you know, Jesus, I said this, Jesus, he doesn't pray before he goes into the garden. He goes into the garden to pray.
Mm.
Prayer is not the preamble, it's the main event.
Yeah.
And that's what he's there to do, you know. And so, you know, it's kind of cool to see that Jesus is telling us how we can fight temptation.
Yeah.
In that, you know.
And that was good, so good, because, like you said, you know, when we read this passage of Scripture, and I've heard a whole bunch of messages on the, you know, the disciples in their sleep. And I think in one of the other Gospels, Jesus comes and like, what?
Yeah.
Could you not stay with me? And you know, a lot of times when we hear this, it's almost like it's a bad thing that they're sleeping.
Yeah.
But you kind of share with us, there's a reason why they're sleeping.
Right.
It's because of the grief.
Right.
They know what he's about to endure.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I could have got up there and ripped them.
Yeah.
We could have got up there and been like, you jokers, you're falling asleep.
Yeah. What's wrong with you? Normally how I've heard that passage.
When you see that they're in grief and you think about it within the timeline, like you said, you understand there's something deeper happening here, you know?
Yeah. So kind of what you were saying too, we all manage and handle grief a little bit differently. But how do we handle it, grief? It's through prayer. And Jesus gave us an example of what to do when you're overtaken by grief and pain. He withdrew and he prayed.
Mm-hmm.
He knew that he was heading to the cross. He knew that pain that he was going to endure. In that pain was grief. And he withdrew and prayed. So he gave us an example of what we should do in our Gethsemane moments.
Right.
The time of pressing, the time of pain.
Pray. Yeah,
pray. It's to pray.
It's not just praying, though. He even models the way. That was what struck me the most, I think, it was in his prayer.
Yeah.
Because he says, Lord, if you're willing.
Right. And that's what I was going to say. He not only tells us to pray,
yeah,
but he tells us how to pray.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's like when you have Jesus, who is the most iconic like person in of our faith, our entire faith system is central, is centered around Jesus. And you have Jesus praying and not trying to control God, the Father, but coming with a request, if you are willing.
Yeah.
That's like, that's crazy, man.
Yeah.
That's a big deal, because I think in our culture, especially in Christian culture, there's a lot of different theology and ideas about how to receive blessings from God.
Name it and claim it.
You name it and claim it, you know? Like, I wasn't trying to hit too hard on that on Sunday, but there are people that, if you name it and claim it, if you know, the Bible doesn't say don't make your request to God.
Yeah.
It says make your request to God.
Yeah.
Make your request known.
Yeah.
And God will sometimes make a way,
mm-hmm.
deliver you. But it's funny that Jesus isn't commanding the Father. He's not telling him what to do. He approaches him and submits his will to the greater will of the Father and says, if you're willing, take it.
Mm-hmm.
And man, that's a hard one. That's a hard one for all of us, because we all want God to do what we want him to do, especially when you're pressed.
Yeah.
You're like, get me up out of here, God. Right. I need you to do something right now. And the problem, and I didn't touch on this on Sunday. This is like, I didn't have time for this. But how many of us get angry at God?
Mm.
We use him not answering how we want him to answer as a reason for us to run from God, to be angry at God. I know people who've lived their whole lives mad at God because when they were 14, he didn't bring their parents back together.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff like that, where you're just like, and yeah, they were in a pressing moment and God didn't change the situation and extract it. They don't see that maybe God gave them the strength to get through it.
Yeah.
But, you know, and so the idea that Jesus comes to the Father going, if you're willing, man, what an example.
Yeah.
What an example.
Yeah. And one thing you said too is like our will and God's will, two completely different things.
Yeah.
You know, like you said, I could pray, you know, my will, God, make me a millionaire.
Right.
God's like, no. If you have your will, you'll spend all your money on Jordans.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, there's that, Darren. He knows you, bro.
So he knows me.
Yeah.
So he's asking the Father, if it's your will, take this cup from me. That's what he was praying. So yeah. This cup is significant. So you shared on Sunday what is in the cup, and it's his humanity. He's asking to take away from him. Can you share exactly what was in that cup that he's talking about?
Yeah. Well, if you just read this passage just casually, he says, let this cup pass from me. You're like, what the heck are you talking about?
Right.
A cup.
Yeah.
What is it? Was there a cup in the garden? Is he having a, he's got Stanley in his hand in the garden. What's going on? And what he's talking about is the cup of the wrath of God. He's saying he knows that he's going to have to take on the sins of the world. This is the mission. And the weight of that is crushing. I mean, it's bigger than anything we'd ever face in this life. And so he's saying, if there's any other way that man can be saved, can we do that?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, because we don't know. We don't know what that pressure is, what's in, like how that cup feels. But when you got Jesus sitting in the garden sweating blood, and you've never sweated blood before,
right.
You can imagine it's a heavy weight.
Yeah.
And so I think that he's just saying, if there's any other way that man can be saved, let's do that. And there isn't.
Right.
And so that's when you see the turn in the story, you know.
And that turn is one of the most powerful words in the Bible.
Yeah.
Nevertheless.
Nevertheless.
Why is this word so important to us?
Our fate was decided when he said nevertheless. It was up in the air.
Yeah.
Like Jesus is having that humanity moment. Not humanity moment. He was 100% human and 100% God.
Mm-hmm.
But we see his humanity more on display when he goes, if there's any other way, let this cup pass from me. And then immediately, I like to think it's the same breath. He didn't even pause. He just says, nevertheless, let your will be done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm not trying to add to the scripture or anything, but I like to think that he saw us. You know, he saw me, he saw all of us, his children. And he's like,
so it wasn't a moment where he was pondering, well, maybe.
Maybe. No. Nah, we'll do it your way.
Like you said,
it was. Nah. There's weight behind that word. Right. Nevertheless, had weight behind it because it was a moment where he was like, no, I'm going to do this. You know, I said in Luke 9, I think it is, the Bible, Luke says, Jesus turned his face to Jerusalem. Mm. Like, turned his face to the cross. Basically, like, I'm not running from this. I'm facing it head on. Yeah. And the cross reference was out at Isaiah, where he says, I set my face like flint. So it was like he was dead set. His face in that moment, nevertheless, I'm going to die so that people might have life.
Bring it on.
Let's go. You know?
Yeah.
Like, let's get it popping. Like, this is going down.
Yeah.
That's why that moment is such a turning point for us. And, you know, we ought to be grateful that Christ, 100% God, 100% man, said nevertheless.
Yeah.
You know.
That's good. And something so powerful in this teaching for us is, how do we respond in those moments of pressure? Is it about me, what I want to do, or my will? Or nevertheless, it will be about the Father. And that's not always easy for us. And something you said also that's so powerful, it's not about us bending God's will to ours. It's about us bending our will to God.
Right.
That's good. Yeah. Can you expand on that?
Yeah, for sure. I think I think that's what prayer is. Prayer is not about asking God and making him do what we want him to do. It's about us changing our will to do what God wants to do. Jesus shows us that. He says, nevertheless, let your will be done. And I feel like I'm the guy here at our church that's always hammering this. I feel like the last couple sermons that I've preached, I'm talking to like control freaks and people that want to control God. I don't know why. I literally think my last sermon, I was like, people trying to control God. And, I guess it just comes out in this where, I mean, you look at cultures around the world. If I pray this many times, if I bow to the east this many times, if I do this, then God does this for me. I mean, you look at ancient civilizations and belief systems in the Greece and all these other places, you are doing something to cause God to act and to move. Whereas what we do in response, what we do for God is in response to his, he moved first.
Yeah.
I mean, he, you know, and so I feel like, you know, I keep harping on the control freaks and the fact that we can't control God. But I think it's an important lesson to learn, because there are going to be times that you pray and he's not going to answer and do it the way you want him to do.
Mm-hmm.
So if you know that up front, you're going to be able to process it better. You're going to be able to process your pain better. You're not going to get upset and be mad at God.
For 14 years. Yeah. Since you're a 14-year-old, you're still hanging on.
So let me just tell you up front. Sometimes you're going to pray and he's not going to be a genie in the bottle. I rub that lamp and he does what you want him to do.
Yeah.
And where is that scene in the story of Jesus?
Yeah.
I said it on Sunday. Heaven responded. This is one of my favorite parts. Heaven responded not by bringing down a chopper and extracting Jesus from the scene.
Chopper.
Yeah. Get to the chopper. He didn't send down a chopper and extract Jesus from the scene.
Yeah.
It says heaven, an angel came from heaven, appeared to him, strengthening him.
Yeah.
So and
that's exactly where I was leading.
Yeah. It wasn't like, I'm going to take this situation from you. No, it needed to happen. It's going to happen.
Yeah.
But I'm going to strengthen you for it. You know? And I think Jesus does that probably in our lives more than changing the situation. He can. And sometimes he does.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he will deliver you from some situations.
More often than not.
But more often than not, because of the system he designed, we're going to go through struggle, because when we look back, we're going to see the value in it. And that happens probably more often than a major deliverance from something that you're going through.
And there's growth in that. Mm-hmm. If he just kind of pulled us out each time, we were just like, well, he's going to do it, you know.
Right.
But I've endured it, and I can look back. It's like, only he gets the glory out of that.
Exactly.
And I've benefited from it.
Yeah, there's a confidence that comes, confidence in God.
Oh, for
when
sure.
When it comes to that. You know, I think of David on the battlefield. He shows up on the battlefield when he's a boy to bring food to his brothers. And he's like appalled at how everybody's scared of Goliath. And he's like, yo, let me at him. And the king brings him in his tent. And he goes, why do you think that you're going to be able to take down Goliath?
Yeah.
And he said, God delivered the bear into my hands. God delivered the lion into my
track
hands.
Track record, baby.
God's track record is impeccable. You know how to bring that back.
Yeah.
He's impeccable. His track record's impeccable. So I have this confidence that God is going to give me the strength to take down the giants in my life. God didn't come down and kill. God could have killed Goliath and just ended it.
Mm-hmm.
Lightning could have struck. Right. Goliath could have fell. But now in that moment, he gave David the strength to take down the giant. Yeah. And I don't know, man. I just feel like we see that over and over and over. And then we see it in the person who's the most important person to us. We see it in the person of Jesus. You know, so.
And that last part of the scripture is really an encouragement to all of us. Verse 43, as you mentioned, and the angel appeared to him and strengthened him. And the reason why this is so important is because we're not on our own dealing with this pressing. God will strengthen you to endure those moments when it seems insurmountable. And if you feel like the weight of your Gethsemane moment is too much for you to bear, you can find freedom in that moment through prayer. That freedom is first known by knowing God.
Exactly.
And I want to encourage you to listen to this message in its entirety on YouTube, Facebook, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcast. And you will be encouraged by this. God bless you, and we will see you next week.
All right.